Welcome everyone. I'm Hugo Desler from Farming Secrets, and we're lucky to have online Brendan Eisner. Now Brendan farms, and he'll tell us all about how he farms, at a little town called Muskvale, which is near Dalesford, which again is near Ballarat, and it's a fairly elevated area. Now Brendan, hello there, how are you?
Yep. Good, thanks. Yeah, good.
Brendan, you might tell the listeners or our Farming Secrets members what sort of farming you do, and maybe how you got a bit of personal history, like how you got into what you're doing.
Okay. Well, I presume people have seen the DVD, so I don't really want to go over too much of that. And I'm, you know, much more interested in people's questions. I've got some of already off Hugo, so I can relate to them. But I had farming in my blood from an early age, in the sense that my parents had a hobby farm. I mean, but I was brought up in the city, so I was pretty green to it all. But I knew that I wanted to get out of the city. So about 8 years ago, not long after I met my wife, we moved to the country with a six-month-old baby and decided, well, first we weren't necessarily going to commercially farm, but we were just sort of looking for a life change, and we stumbled across what was sort of a working farm already, so we decided to go with that, and have just developed it ever since. And someone was asking me the other day about, you know, planning and whole farm planning, and we definitely did a lot of that, integral planning as a whole. And I guess what we've generally done is had an ideological sort of whole farm plan for what we want to do, and which is basically create a model of, you know, small self-sustaining organic farming. And then as a second stage, I guess, start to use that model as an education tool, to show other people how it can be done, because, I mean, I guess when we started, there wasn't a lot to see how it could be done. So that's in a very broad sense. In a little bit more specific, that we've grown from, you know, we bought a property with existing apple trees, 300 trees, and we planted another 500 as the first step. Then we sort of moved into doing chickens, and that's got bigger and bigger and bigger, up to carrying about 900 hens at the moment. And then came sort of specific crops like garlic and things that we thought would, you know, suit. And from that grew basically a market garden with 30 varieties, I mean, 30 species, if you like, of vegetables, and up to 200 varieties. So that's sort of in a nutshell.
Yeah. And Brendan, you spent, I dare say, you did a fair bit of research, how to get there. You have said that. With your skills that you've got now, if you started farming again, would you be able to get to where you've got to now much more quickly?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, to a certain extent, yes. To a certain extent, you know, farming is, you know, roll with the punches, because you never know. Like, we started farming and, you know, we've got to be crazy in one sense. We started farming sort of realistically 6 years ago in the worst drought in living memory. So, you know, as much as I could say, you know, I'd get things done a lot quicker, I would have the tools to work with nature a lot better. I guess that's what I'd do, and that's what I'd try and, you know, pass on to people in an education sense, is getting those tools that help you work with nature. You can never sort of go according to a human plan when you're farming, because you're working with nature, and she doesn't respond to bits of paper that tell her when to do things. So, But, yeah, it's interesting, because I thought I had people would say, you know, you've got all this set up and, you invested so much time and energy in a property, you know, you can't imagine leaving it now. But I sort of could imagine leaving this particular property in a sense, because I know I've invested a lot of time in it, but the time is invested in me as well and in my knowledge, and I could go to a bare block and sort of start again and do it a lot differently, you know what I mean?
And, Lola, excellent. So, in actual fact, we'll come across this later, you would be in a position, if you want to be, to provide your knowledge to other people so they, in fact, whether you write a book or whatever else or did something, could you see yourself in the future possibly training other people to do what you've done so they can do it more quickly?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely one of the areas I want to move into. That was always part of the plan, is sort of, we had 2 10-year plans, like I was saying before. So, you know, I had to get 10 years experience and at understanding and creating a model and then start to move into education or consultation. And I mean, to some degree, I've already started consulting with people and giving advice, and not so much on it. I haven't done it on a paid basis as yet, but that's something I'll sort of have to figure out how it sits with me, you know, in terms of people paying me for advice. I mean, I along the way have paid a lot of people for advice. It's a very important, I consider it a very important part of getting to where I am. Because you can't, as much as you think you can figure it all out for yourself, I mean, you just can't.
Yeah. Not only have you paid for advice, like with the dollars, but you also pay for it in time away from the farm and visiting other places, visiting or going to seminars. That also is something that has to be looked at or has to be valued when you're passing that information on to other people. It's not just...
courses. I mean, you jump on anything you can. Jump on all the courses, you know that you can, and you sort of align yourself with as many people that think the same, you know, in a broad sense as you, that can give you some expertise and some help. I mean, I haven't travelled extensively because I just can't get away from the farm and the family for long times, but, you know, I've been to Canberra for a few days to workshops and, you know, Warragul, which seems just as far as Canberra, because Elaine seems to always be in Warragul, which is the other side of the... seems like the other side of the world for me, but... Yeah.
Brendan, you got a fair bit of insights or... people like Joel Salatin and Alec Coleman. Do you think that expertise, two things, do you think that you've acquired a fair bit of information from those sort of people where you could pass that on to people here? And the next part of the question would be, do you think that information now resides in Australia? You don't have to sort of go overseas to get the information to do what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I would think that a lot of it does reside in Australia to some degree, yeah. Good question. I think it is. I mean, I think you still need to search out worldwide, and I mean, the internet's been an incredible tool, you know, in that, for again, like I said, for things that click with you and things that you think, oh, that's, you know, a good idea, or that's a good piece of machinery, or, you know... But there's very few things that I've actually had to source directly from overseas. You know, you might source information, but then you'll find someone here that's actually disseminating that information already. For instance, you know, Elaine's obviously based in the US, but there's she comes out here, and there's the lab in Lismore. The other example is, I mean, Elliot Coleman's based in the US, but Mike, I've forgotten his name now, but... Michael in from Gundarutilla, does a lot of Elliot stuff and disseminates his information and his tools, sells his tools as well, and that's where I went and saw Elliot at Mike's place. So you can source it, and I guess, you know, to some degree people will come to me for that sort of information too.
Yeah, great stuff. Now, when it comes to the chooks, oh no, before I get onto the chooks, there's some couple of general questions which I'd like to handle. One is that we're looking at your chooks, whether that electric fence that you've got there, the mesh, is that sort of electrified onto the ground, and is it leakage in the ground?
Yeah, the mesh, I'm just looking at the questions here too. The mesh is electrified. It's absolutely brilliant. I've tried a couple of different ones, and this particular one comes from, they've changed manufacturers, so I think it comes from the States now, but it comes through Gundaroo Tiller in Canberra, is where I buy it. And yeah, I mean, it's just, for fence, I can only talk about fencing chickens, but it's used, it's actually manufactured for lambs, I mean, sheep as well, and goats, I think, and I don't know, you'd have to talk to them, but it's such a versatile product. It comes in 50 metre rolls, and you just lay it out on the ground and then pick each pole up and stamp on it with your foot, and away you go, she's up. So you can have like a 50 metre little round circle or a square, or you can do 200 metres, or you can do 2,000 metres with it if you wanted. You just have to get the matching charger with it. So I noticed the next question is, how do you stop leakage? You don't really. I mean, you just accept some form of leakage. I mean, you try, if you've got long grass, we'll actually at certain times of the year, we might actually go through with a mower or whippersnipper in the line that we're going to put the fence. Because you don't, you know, if you can avoid it, you don't want leakage. But the bottom line of the mesh fence isn't actually electrified.
Right. Is electricity that keeps the chooks in, or is it just a physical barrier?
It's mostly a physical barrier. They can't get through it. But they do in the early days get shocks, and they'll walk away from them. They don't get shocks regularly because they're feathered and they don't really get earth that well. So, but it's basically a physical barrier to keep the chooks in, not so much to keep the foxes out, because, as I probably mentioned in the DVD, we had it just the fences. At one stage, and it would only keep the foxes out sort of 80% of the time, and we'd still get fox kills. They'd figure out a way to get through, or the charger would, you know, the battery might be a bit low, and there's always those variables. But since we've had Maremma dogs in there, the fence is basically to control where we want the chooks, and the dog pretty much keeps the foxes away and the fence, but, you know.
Alan Wood is a person who's asked about the electric fencing, and also he's running ducks in his, on his property, and especially in his walnut orchard. Do you think, it's pretty well answered in the DVD, the marina dogs can be used for any sort of stock, so they could be used for ducks, couldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I can't guarantee, because I haven't done it, although we're about to. I might have to ask Alan some questions. We've just got our first 25 ducks, and they're only 6 weeks old now, so we're just sort of slowly diversifying in that sense too, and they don't have a dog with them yet, but I'm actually about to put a dog with them, and I can't imagine any problem. It's a very similar thing. Yeah. I mean, Maremmas themselves, you know, in terms of if you get a puppy and training them up, and you know, I mean, it's an ordeal like any other ordeal that you've got to learn and go through. The difficult thing with Maremmas is that, I guess like any dog really, but they don't really mature for almost, you know, two, maybe 2.5 years and calm down from being puppies. So during that you can have issues with them. They can play rough with the animals, and, you know, we had issues of them at killing chooks, and, you know, you just got to work through all that. But
yeah, great. Now, I did hear you just say that you are going to start with some ducks, is that right?
Yeah, we've just started. We've got six-week-old ducks at the moment, 25 of them.
Yeah.
So Alan's question, I'll throw Alan's question back to him. If someone can refer me to a duck expert. I'd be happy too.
All right, because that's what he wants to know, what a duck expert is. Another question from Rick Preston is that, have you thought of other animals other than chooks, particularly pigs?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, not as... it's also, you've got to... one of the really important things, I think, in farming is you've got to find a niche in your market as well. It's all very well just having animals for the sake of animals, but you've got to find a niche and also fit into a community. And we've got another organic farm down the road here, Fernley Farm, who are very well known for their rare breed pigs. And it's one of those things that, you know, we might get pigs as a part of the farm as such, but I can't see us ever doing pigs for sale, because you just, like, we sell our eggs, they sell our eggs for us in their farm shop, and I wouldn't really go starting up a pig business, you know, a pig meat business, and start treading on their turf. You've got to sort of fit in within a community.
Fair enough. That's fair enough.
So the answer to that is no, but cows, I'm quite interested. I mean, on the hobby farm I grew up with, so I grew up around cows, and I'd be quite interested to do that, you know, to maybe move into that at some stage. And it does sit very well with the chickens. I mean, Joel talks a lot about the rotations of having the cows in and then the chickens follow and basically harrow up the cow pat past, you know, in the pasture and eat all the worms out of the cow pats and everything and complement each other quite well. So it could be something to look at.
Right. When it comes with the chooks, do you mix your own feed, or do you buy it in already mixed up, what sort of feed do you give them?
It's basically just whole grain. So we buy as local as we can. You know, the last few years the local farmers haven't really had much of a crop, and we've had to get it from a bit further. But basically, it's a wheat, as high protein wheat as you can get, and other grains at different times, and we feed them also a meal, which is safflower meal that's left over after pressing safflower oil from a local farm. But, you know, soybean meal would be good for them. Most conventional and organic farmers would feed meat meal, which is, you know, basically ground up cow carcasses. We just don't want to do that. We just don't believe doesn't sit quite well with us, so... we don't feed them that, and we're basically with them on free range. You know, we're hoping to get the worm population, you know, pretty high that they can feed off that. And we're gonna start talking. I've started talking with another one of your farmers, David Davidson, into looking at creating actual worm farms in order to feed the worms to the chickens. The other thing they need is a shell grit, which we buy in at the moment, which is just mined shells. But I'm starting to look at a more sustainable source of that too.
So with the grain, with the feed for the chooks, do you mix it up into sort of a mash or mixed up, or does it go to them in different containers, or do you just
fed the grain, just whole grain fed in feed containers that just sort of, like a feeder, a normal feeder thing that just releases it as they eat it. And so they've got it in each product in different containers, and they can pick and choose. They're very good at picking what they need in terms of their nutritional requirements. So they'll do that. So it saves us mixing up a feed ration and feeding them every day. We only feed them three times a week. So it saves on labour too.
So, but the feed is there pretty well all the time, though, isn't it?
That's what I mean. They've got access to their feed all the time. I don't mean we feed them three times a week. It's just that you fill up the feeders three times a week, and it lasts for a couple of days at a time.